Welcome to Stand By with JJ.
Do you ever feel self-conscious about how much we cheer when it goes on? Like when you watch TV shows and a TV show has a lot of cheering at the top when they're like, here we go.
Yeah, they have a fan, like fans, or they have a band, or they have, you know, people playing sounds. Like we have to make everything, you know, so we can't, because it'd be weird if we go like, hey, welcome, you know, like. We're not like an NPR, like, welcome to Stand By and JJ with Francesca. Yeah, that's a little too.
But that's what I said, but we're also not like Dish Nation, because Dish Nation, when it starts, when they go, this is Dish Nation, they're all like, they're all yelling and, you know, yelling and screaming like it's a party.
No, we don't want like, ba 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 ba. We don't want that.
Yeah, here we go. Like 80s.
I want to say I have a show coming up that's going to be live, and hopefully I get the chance to do it on Washington, D.C. Actually, it's going to be in Arlington, Virginia, which is pretty much D.C. area. And it's going to be on April, and it's going to be on April. I'm looking here at the dates quickly before April 9 and 10. At the Draft House, Arlington Draft House. And it's going to be basically my first time headlining since a year, you know, like doing an hour. If people are interested, go to the website, go to my website, or go to the Arlington Draft House website and you get your tickets there.
Yeah. Now, is this going to be a full capacity show, Francisco, or is it going to be like a quarter capacity?
I think it's still like half capacity or like whatever percentage is. And this is like a big, it's like a theater club that got turned into a comedy club. So it's like a big stage up and like everybody kind of like chills in a seat. So I think that the cool thing about that one is like they have a lot of room to be spread out. So everybody can be spread out and stuff like that. Yeah.
Oh, that'll be really fun. Everybody get your first taste of some live stand-up, man. Get out and see them.
Yeah,
San Francisco. That's very exciting, man. I'm very excited about our guest this week. This is super. I consider him a friend. I consider him a mentor. I consider him a great road comic, like a great workhorse of stand-up comedy. Tom Rhodes is our guest, and you too. You know him as well, Francisco.
Yeah. No, I think I met him like at the comedy store, like here and there, but then I actually got to like hang out with him more and kind of like be more friendly with him when I did a feature for him on Vegas at Brad Garrett's Comedy Club, like a week. And you know, that's like a week where you're seeing the comic every day, and we got to like hang out. I think I was with my girlfriend and he was with his girlfriend or wife, I mean, and they were, we kind of like did some couple things. So yeah, I'm very excited because he's a comic that's, I mean, most of his career has been traveling all over the world. Like, I mean, he literally performs everywhere in the world. And like, you know, we got to talk about how he started in New York. You can see he's from DC, then moved to Florida, but then actually started in New York, but then went to London and all over the world. Right. And, and you got to meet him in England, right?
Yeah, exactly. He was one of those first guys that blew my mind in England, because of course Britain actually, because I was in Scotland. I feel that I was living in Scotland at the time. It was when I first moved there. I first lived in Scotland, but him and him and Rich Hall are, to me, they form an important moment in my career because here I am immersed in this British culture, and I was a new comic entertaining British people and learning off of British comics. And I was working at the Gilded Balloon in Scotland, and in walks Rich Hall and Tom Rhodes, these two American guys, and I could just feel the presence of them. I could feel these are veteran comedians who know what's up, and to watch them perform and everything. They were the first two. I know they were both American, but for this Canadian who was already out of water, they blew my mind, and I was like, I need to be around these people more. And so yes, whenever I see Tom, I still think I still feel like that brand new comedian who first met like him and Rich Hall and was just like, oh my God.
This is
I want to have this power in foreign, the way that these Americans are holding the court in front of Scottish people. I want to be able to do that like them. And so this is very exciting for me.
It's very exciting. And it was very cool to listen on the episode, to talk about on the episode, how he, cause it's a comic that's done a lot you know, a lot of stuff in his career. Like he obviously he's done stand-up specials, but he also was the host of a talk show in Holland, and then he also hosted a travel show in Holland, and now he also recorded a new vinyl record. And so he's done like so much stuff, and he has so much stories to share on like traveling and things that he's done, foods that he loves to eat and everything. So it's like, it's very exciting to like talk to him and learn a lot from him.
Yeah, really exciting. So that's coming right up, man. We're super excited, but I know that there's something you're dying to hear from me, which is
your love life again.
I know you're really excited because it's been a couple of weeks, buddy. It's been a couple of weeks.
Well, it's been a couple of weeks that you haven't called me again about your life. That's
what yeah, it's been a couple of weeks since I've gotten one of these texts, and it's happened. The matchmakers have texted me. And so I just want to read you it right now, and then we can decide I know how you feel, but this is the text I just got. And remember, I've done three of these now. Hi, Jason. This is Jessica. One of our matchmakers thinks you might be a great fit for us, for our client. During this time of social distancing, we know the connection matters more than ever. Are you available to connect over a video call to learn more about our client? Now, that's the text. Now, the first thing you said this to me a couple weeks ago. You're like, do you get to see photos? And the answer is no, Francisco. Yeah, you don't. You it's a go-between. You have to talk to them.
Now, at that point, I'm out. You know what I mean? Like,
just like that? No, yeah, no photo, no Francisco. That's it.
I mean, it's hard because it's kind of like going to a restaurant. Like, there's some menus that have the food, like the pictures of the food. And there are also menus that, especially that fancy, say? That just say the stuff. But like, okay. I mean, I guess it depends on the description, you know, because like, but I get, to me, I believe that, yeah, you fall in love or you go out with somebody because of who they are as a person. But initially you have to be attracted to them in some way, like, you know, like you have to like their eyes, their hair,
right? Yeah, whatever, the physical like, to me, that's the spark.
That's the spark. Everything else, right. Like, that's the most important thing. And it doesn't matter how hot you are, if you can't get along, it's not gonna work. But I think you do need to at least show you a picture, you know, because it's too like, that's like, you know, you need to see the picture.
Yeah, I'm with you. The initial attraction has to be physical. It has to be. Unless it's a real long-term game here. Unless we're talking like Biodome syndrome or something. You're like, yeah, I know he was ugly, but he charmed me. He charmed me. And then after 3 years, we were a thing. You know,
But also, like, the text is weird. It's kind of like, I feel like it's like, if it's like some like Jennifer Aniston, the one looking for a date. Like, hey, my client thinks you're a man, and then it's like I expect her to do that because she's got a lot of weird people maybe like trying to, you know, so she needs to like, but like I don't understand, like, why can't just be like, hey, by the way, this is a girl, she likes you, do you like her, do you want to talk, you know, kind of like more easy. It feels very like weird the way that I think
they need some rules and stuff too, though. I think because I've now, having done this a couple times now, I haven't been their client, but I've been on this other side of this, you know, and it's usually because she wants somebody funny. They always say, we want somebody funny. And then I always like casually talk to the matchmaker and I'm like, they want somebody attractive who they can find funny. They don't want somebody. It doesn't work that way, but they're they said funny, get in the funny guy. That's what they wanted. And like, there's a whole bunch of different kinds of funny, you know, there's good looking funny, you know, like, you know, Dane Cook in his prime or Lachlan Patterson, they were good looking funny. They can do what they want. But and then there's whatever, Gilbert Gottfried funny.
Yeah.
I don't know why I chose those.
Yeah, names. I don't know why you went into that tangent. I was like, let him die on that hill. I don't know what he's talking about.
What we're talking about, who's good looking? I mean, those are good looking comedians.
All right, okay. I can see that now. I think also before we get to actually to our guest, Tom, I think we need to remind our big fans, our big listeners, to subscribe to the podcast on on YouTube, please do that. We need it. We need the subscriptions there. Also follow us on Spotify, iTunes, and follow us on all the social media as well. And if you have any questions, you can DM us on Instagram or send us a message on Twitter as well.
Yeah. And if you're on a matchmaker service, just let the person who's got you as a client know. I don't know what the opposite of a client. Let your matchmaker know that we're out there. And then Francisco can't wait to hear.
I can't wait. But what I can't wait to hear is Tom Rhodes. So why don't we get on it?
Me too. This is exciting. So here we go. Here's our interview with the Road Warrior, Tom Rhodes.
Bye, hello. One. All right.
Ladies and gentlemen, are back, and as our guest this week, we have comedy legend, Road Warrior, Tom Rhodes.
Yay!
Hey, how you doing, buddy? Good to see you.
Hey, Francisco. God, it's so good to see you guys.
Yeah, good seeing you.
Absolutely fantastic, and I'm going to guess this is COVID hair. The rock and roll hair is back.
It's been exactly 1 year since I've had a haircut. So,
oh wow!
Yeah, me too. Me as
it looks
well.
Good. It looks good because he has the shape. You know what I mean? It has good shape.
It
seems like you already got a haircut to make it like shape, but it's good.
Yeah,
it's good.
I forgot I had a nice little flip here. You know?
Yeah.
23 years of bad haircuts. I've been getting short.
Right. You know? It's got body and flow, baby. And you got tons of postcards behind you.
Yeah.
Holy cow. That's a very good look, man. And are these, are all postcards that you've collected in your travels around the world, because you have definitely logged more air miles than the average comedian, I would say.
Yeah, traveling all over the world, I've sent postcards to people, and then also I've, you know, saved. You know, I'll buy 10 to send to friends, and then I'll buy one for myself. So I had them all in shoeboxes, and. After I got divorced, there was no one to tell me I couldn't tape them all over my walls. So I thought no one, you know, you never see them in the boxes. And then, you know, I did that before COVID. I did it in 2019. So now it's kind of cool to have all these world destinations all over my. I feel like my whole life has been building up to the pandemic.
And there you go. And now it can be a good litmus test for a new lover too. If they walk in and they're like, "Ah, oh, cool postcards," then you're like, "All right, you can stay around." If they walk in and go, "Oh God, what's going on here?" Then just turn them around out the door.
Yeah, no, I have a new girlfriend, and she loves it. She thinks it's cool.
Very nice. Cool. I mean, I've gotten into that habit myself. I was sending my grandfather passed away last year, but I was sending him postcards because he's not online, and he was getting later in his years. He was like, "I don't read these emails and all this kind of stuff." So I started sending him postcards. I have a short list. I send my nieces and nephews postcards when I'm traveling around the world. I send Ed Burns' kids postcards. Just because I know that Ed's not doing it, but I just to kind of put something in Ed's face going, "I travel to these places." And so that's my list. So those four, but I haven't sent a postcard in over a year, obviously, you know, for obvious reasons. But yeah, I think it's a great habit to get into. They're hard to find now, aren't they? They're getting hard to find a postcard.
Yeah, in some places, but I think, yeah, email and Facebook kind of killed the postcard, but I still believe in it. And people get cracked up when you put some sunshine in the mailbox, you know?
Yeah, I think it feels good to be able to hold something concrete there and go, "Oh, look, it's Spain." Yeah.
On my podcast, you know, it's I have Patreon subscribers.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And actually my ex-wife, who I'm still very good friends with, you remember Ashna.
Mm-hmm.
Her idea a few years ago, the people who are in the people who give me $20 a month to, through Patreon to support my podcast, I send them a postcard from wherever I'm at in the world. So I've been doing that for a few years.
Oh, right on.
every month I've got like 20 people, so I send out postcards, and I still have a box of postcards from around the world. I still have tons and tons of them. So now I've been dipping into the reserves, you know.
Right. Yeah, yeah.
Then it's wow.
Yeah, that's real cool.
Postcard.
Yeah, man. Yeah, me too. I'm a big fan. Like I said, it helped me. It helps. And those kids, like my nieces and nephews, I know that them receiving a postcard is more exciting to them than my sister standing at her computer and going, look, your uncle is somewhere else in the world. So I'm 100% with that. And that's, you've given us the perfect segue as well, Tom. By mentioning your Patreon and your podcast, we do want to say at the top, the man Tom Rhodes, he's just released his first ever vinyl record, I believe. Mm-hmm. And it comes with a digital download codes. And if you've got it there, Tom, man, get on board this, everybody.
The Honky Motherland.
The Honky Motherland. I recorded it in Brighton, England. And then the digital download card is the whole album, which is all over all over England. It's great.
Wow. Yeah.
England, Ireland, Scotland.
Right on. Yeah. Welcome to Vinyl Land. This is your first vinyl album. First album on vinyl.
Yeah, and I gotta show you. I'm a big fan of vinyl. I've got like,
yeah,
yeah. So
wow,
me yeah. too. Well, yeah, this is really funny. Sorry, go ahead, buddy.
I'm really excited to have my first vinyl record because when I travel, I always go to used record stores and used bookstores and stuff.
Right on, and yeah, because. That's what, like, we've got a bit of a vinyl collection going too. Francisco and I, when we started the podcast 14 episodes ago, we were filming it in front of the vinyl. So I would love a copy of your album because it'll go straight on that shelf.
Cool.
I've got this shelf and I try to display the records on it. But yeah, I have a comedy row as well. But yeah, awesome, man. I mean, I think it's really exciting when you get your first vinyl, having the album that you can hold instead of saying to people, go to Spotify and download the link.
Yeah.
They just arrived 3 days ago, so my apartment is full of boxes of vinyl. Pretty cool.
Yeah, man, that tracks.
That sounds, I do cool. want to also give some more intro to Tom for the few people that don't know him. But Tom has been doing comedy,
couple years?
Basically all his life. I mean, he was actually one of the first comedians that Comedy Central signed when it first started. And he was a star of his own sitcom called Mr. Rhodes. And he also had a show in Holland, right? It was called Kevin Masters Show, starring Tom Rhodes and Jorin, about traveling, right? Or is it about, or that's his name?
I had two shows in
Sorry, I apologize.
Yeah, no. You combined them. I did a late night talk show for 2 years.
Okay.
Called Kevin Masters, starring Tom Rhodes, and then the same network. The network was called You're In. They let me do this travel show called You're In Travel. So it was pretty cool. You know, those were two huge dreams to have my own late night talk show, walk out from behind the curtain, you know, wearing a suit, and you stand on the X, give the monologue, go to the desk. Banter with the musical sidekick, do a skit, then bring out the first death. You know, it was a thrill, you know, because I grew up watching Johnny Carson and David Letterman, and then to be able to be a presenter on a travel show, the Netherlands, that little country, was very good to me. Wow. And I did a highlight on St. Petersburg, Russia, Peru, the Champagne region of France, the eastern coastal region of France, Belgium, Aruba, Curacao. I really did a lot of great things with Dutch television.
That's awesome.
That's very awesome. Did you stumble into Holland? Did you was that a calculated move, or was it a hey, I'm here and things are cool, I'll just keep going?
Well, I mean, like, I'm sure you had a very similar history that, you know. First, I went over and I London was my main focus. And for me, London was the key to the worldwide circuits for me. Once I got in with London, I started playing London a lot. And then that led to gigs around England. And then I got offered gigs around Europe. And I played in Amsterdam, and I fell in love with a Dutch woman, and then I moved there. Mm. And the relationship, yeah, the relationship didn't work out. And right when I was about to leave Holland, these people from this Dutch television network saw me playing at Toomler. Right. You've played Toomler.
Yeah, man. And I love Toomler.
And they were looking for an American to host a late night talk show, and I got the job. So it was a miracle.
Yeah, man. And like, that's one of those things where you would say that, oh, wasn't that lucky? But at the same time, you're honing these skills and you were ready for the opportunity. So I always say, you know, when you're ready for that luck and it could come out of nowhere, that's the perfect, what a great opportunity, man.
They actually had a showcase at Toomler, and there was all these American comedians and English comedians. And I had just gotten my first tailored suit.
Right.
And I had a killer set that night. I had one of the best sets, but also I think I was the only one on the show that looked
ready for it.
Yeah, a guy that was a host of a late night talk show.
Wow. So, did you plan that? Was that like strategically? Like, I'm going to show them?
No, total accident. I was just proud that I had my first tailored suit, you know?
So, yeah,
that's awesome.
And just to double check, Tom, it's Tom Rhodes Radio, right? If people look up Tom Rhodes Radio, they find
your radio podcast.
Sorry, Tom Rhodes Radio. Mark Camp. Right. Okay. Awesome, man. So welcome to the show. This is how it's going to work. But what's that, man?
Yeah.
Oh, you cut out there.
Yeah, it's Tom Rhodes Radio Smart Camp. I don't know if that got through.
Okay.
Yeah, that's handy. I think it's all getting through. So, buddy, this is we have a system. We have a system that we're working on. It's really straightforward. What we're going to do is it's all about travel and the arts. We just want to get some of your opinions on where you've been, what you like to do. And the way to best do that, we find, is if we hit you quick at the start with 6 questions and you just answer them as quickly as you can, like in one sentence. This gives us a chance for the people in the chat to join in on the conversation too. And then after you finish answering the 6 questions, we will then circle back and we'll dig deep into who Tom Rhodes is. Are you ready? Are you ready to play our little game, man?
I am.
This is awesome. Well, Francisco, you fire away with the first
question. All right. Okay, cool. So, Tom, the first question is, what was your first big move for the sake of your comedy career?
New York.
Okay, great.
Awesome. All right. Now, here's a theoretical one for you, buddy. A friend of yours has asked you to go on tour, and it's the ideal tour to you. Who is the friend, and where are you going?
That's a tough one.
I know. A lot of comedy influences here. He's going through them all.
He's been everywhere in the world, so that's
horrible. I know.
I'm to think who I would want to do this with. I got the location. I'm just trying to figure out. Comedian. I'm sorry to take so long with the.
This is good.
A lot of comedy friends, man.
Rich Hall, New Zealand.
I had Rich Hall written down, man. I've started to scribble it out. Oh shoot, if I can see there, Rich Hall. Boom. Yeah. This is how I knew it was Rich Hall, and then I scribbled it out going, oh, maybe he's not gonna be Rich Hall, but yeah, I love Rich Hall.
Yeah.
What's up? Awesome. Yeah. What a huge influence to me as well, man. I love Rich Hall.
Oh, I love Rich. He's been a great friend to me for a really long time. And I was gonna say someone else, but Rich would be the best, I think.
Great. Yeah, man. Question number 3.
Are you gonna go?
Go ahead.
Okay, no, okay. Okay, question number 3. What kind of travel or places you go or you do as a kid with your family for holidays and stuff like that?
My family is originally from Washington, D.C., and then we moved to Florida when I was 11 or 12. So all of our summer vacations, we always drove from Florida back to D.C. So our summer vacations were always going to D.C., visiting aunts and uncles and cousins, and going to, you know, the
mall and stuff like that.
The mall, the Smithsonian, museums, the Jefferson Memorial. Like, I, you know, grew up, you know, when I'm in DC, I feel like, I feel at home. And, you know, and then my family members went to University of Maryland. And then when you and I met, that was like one of the things I like, I shit in my pants when you told me you went to Maryland, you know, and I was
like, shit in my pants when I met you, but it had nothing to do with Maryland.
Yeah. So,
awesome. Right, so, awesome. So, awesome. So Washington DC. Okay. Yep. Fourth question, JJ.
Here we go, man. So what is an essential item that you like to have on the road with you?
Or sentimental.
Or sentimental. Yeah. What is an item that you love to take with you on the road when you're doing the
I mean, the main thing is my notebook, my joke book, I guess.
Right.
Cool. Next question. What's your favorite recreational activity while you're on the road?
I always like food and unique things, but something that I do everywhere is I always look for used vinyl record stores and used
Yeah, that's
and use what was the other answer?
Bookstores.
Oh, bookstores. Okay, cool.
Yeah, I don't know if you saw the other wall.
Oh, right. Yeah, nice.
Wow.
That's awesome. Wow, that's like, wow, whoa.
It goes forever.
Wow. Wow. That's nice.
I got to know, 2,000 or 3,000 books.
Ooh.
Holy cow, man.
I will ask more questions about it.
That's, okay. That's a lot of reading, yeah. Yeah, in the last...
You can tell... You know, I've gone on the road in my life.
That's
yeah, man.
Wow.
I was traveling mostly, you know?
Yeah, yeah. Here's the last question of our quick fire round. And I'm looking forward to hearing the answer to this one, but it's what is a tradition or a custom of a different country that you would love to bring to America?
The one that I want to say, but I'll just throw this in quick, that now, because of COVID, I think instead of shaking hands, we should all do the Japanese bow.
Oh, yeah.
That's a tradition that I think we should import now, because a lot of dirty people don't wash their hands. but you know what? I love Malaysia. I don't know if you've ever been to Malaysia, and it's kind of the sexy Muslim country.
Oh, we went to Malaysia together.
You and I were there, right? Yeah.
Yeah, we were in Malaysia together. Yeah.
And the women wear these like beautiful, like colorful headscarves and stuff, not like you know, all black hood thing.
Right. Yeah.
So I like that. Not
in a way. Right on.
Awesome.
Well, there we go, buddy. If anybody is joining us in chat and stuff, there you go. There's our topics that we're about to fire away on and have some chats and circle back around there. Tom, buddy, the first question was the big move for your comedy career.
You said New York.
And your answer was New York. So was that were you breaking down the doors when you did that? Or were you given an inkling of like, hey, maybe you should come to New York because you've got.
Sorry. And did you start a comedy in Florida? Or
yes. Yeah. In Orlando. Right. No, I moved there. I wasn't ready yet. You know, everybody kept saying, if you want to be a comedian, you have to live in New York and LA. And I even met Jay Leno and he told me, you know, if you want to be a comedian, you got to live in New York or LA. So, you know, I had that in my head. So I started being a comedian when I was 17. And when I was 20, I moved to New York City and I wasn't ready yet. And I could only afford to live in Washington Heights, which is, and it was 1987 as crack was coming to the neighborhood.
Oh,
it was a very dangerous neighborhood. There'd be gunshots at night.
Wow.
And on Cabrini Boulevard, where I lived, there'd be, in the morning, there'd be smoldering, burned out cars. People would steal cars in Lower Manhattan, drive them up to Cabrini and just like set them on fire and walk away.
Wow.
I got a few sets in the city. I mostly did like one nighters in New Jersey and Long Island, but it was probably one of the worst years of my life. It was really difficult. I moved back to Florida, licked my wounds for a year and, you know, built back up, and then I moved to San Francisco, and then that's where I feel like I got really good as a comedian. I thought the audiences were, you know, I started out on the Southern circuits and in Florida, and it seemed like, you know, my favorite kind of audiences are, you know, multi-ethnic, multinational, somewhat educated and well-informed. And I was just in heaven in San Francisco. And I felt like I could present any kind of, you know, elongated thought or premise on stage. And that's where I got hot. And that's where Comedy Central discovered me. And that's when I started being like a regular face on Comedy Central.
Wow.
And were you, I have two questions in my head.
Yeah, also, and I also have some questions too.
But about that San Francisco one, were you still the younger of the crew, of the group? By the time you went through all this and you had the life experience in New York and now you've shifted to San Francisco, are you still perceived as a young buck on the comedy scene, or were you starting to have some more experienced swagger at this point?
No, I was 22 years old when I arrived there.
Right. Okay. So 20 was New York.
It was a pretty, I think it was the golden age of comedy in San Francisco, because, you know, it was like Mark Maron, Patton Oswalt, Greg Proops, Margaret Cho. I know I'm forgetting other people. Dana Gould was around then. A few years later, Mitch Hedberg started popping around. It was just like, just really great comedians there. And you felt like you wanted to push yourself to impress the other comedians, you know, and it wasn't in the spotlight of LA or New York where people just were, you know, trying to polish 7 minutes and get on TV. It was like people were trying to impress each other with wonderfully written comedy, you know?
Right. That sounds pretty cool.
Last great time you could live in San Francisco too, as an artist. Like if you wanted to be in a band or be a comedian or an artist or whatever, like the rents were pretty doable. And it was a pretty artistic city back then. And when I moved there, I think there was like 4 clubs within the city and then like 5 clubs in the suburbs. So
you had so much stage time.
You could stay, get stage time, and you could stay home and sleep in your own bed without having to go on the road constantly.
Yeah, that's a good hub.
Sorry,
I was just going to ask about New York because I moved. But when you were in New York for the nightmare year of the throwing yourself in the fire, were you on your own, or did you do it with a couple other comics as well and just get a hovel of an apartment, or was this just
I moved there with a girl, and it didn't work out immediately.
Right, she was gone.
So she was gone, and then I was alone for months, and then a friend of mine came for like the last 3 months.
Right. The comedy world is not a good, it's not a good world to be alone in a new city and then throw yourself into it.
Yeah. And then I know somebody, and you know, the winters are brutal there, and
yeah.
By the way, I picture you like in that scene of Big, when Tom Hanks is in the city by himself for the first time and you listen to the gunshots. You know, like, oh my God. But like, I wanted to ask, because you said you started comedy at 17. Is that like a thing that you always wanted to be a comic? Like, because I started very late. Like, I majored in finance and everything, and then I decided. So like, but were you friends that since you were a kid? Did you know that's what you wanted to do?
Since I was 11. So my father loved stand-up comedy. My father had a twisted sense of humor also, but my dad loved Richard Pryor. So he had tons of Richard Pryor vinyl records. And I remember driving around listening to Pryor cassette tapes with my dad in the car as a little kid. And my dad also loved Bob Newhart and Jonathan Winters. He had those albums also. So I grew up with those records in the house. And then in Washington, D.C., my uncle did open mic night comedy and he went to the University of Maryland also. He did open mic night comedy for 1 year, 1978. I was 11. And my dad took me to see him do this open mic night. And it was a club in DC called El Brookman's. It was like the only place that did comedy. I think the Cellar Door did comedy, but they would bring in Pryor or like Carlin, big names. This was mm-hmm. this was the only like club at that time. And I'm the owner I've become friends with on Facebook because he's heard me say this in interviews. And he remembers this night. So my father and I go to the club. The show is in progress. And the entrance was next to the stage, the front door. We walk in, and I'm wearing a Washington Redskins jacket. And I'm 11 years old. The comedian on stage pulls me on stage, and he interviews me like I'm the coach of the Redskins.
Okay.
How do you think we're going to do this year, coach? And, you know, he's asking me all these questions. He keeps calling me coach. And I'm 11. I just, you know, I'm bashful, giving like one-word answers. Yes, no. I'll never forget standing on that stage and seeing all those happy people with their heads thrown back in laughter and all the teeth in their mouth. And, you know, it was Washington, D.C., very diverse city. I'm sure in my mind I've romanticized it, but in my mind there were Black people, Latino people, Asian people, just the flavor, all the flavors of humanity. When you stood on that stage, you were talking to the world. That's like,
wow,
that moment changed my life forever. So from that moment onward, I just became a student of stand-up comedy. I would, you know, I watched Johnny Carson every night. I'd look to see when they had stand-up comedians on. My dad and I always watched HBO specials together, and we would, you know, we would talk about, you know, afterwards we would break them down, what we didn't like, you know, and then I would stay up late and watch Saturday Night Live and just anything comedy. I consumed it.
That's great.
My family moved to Orlando, Oviedo, Florida, when I was 12. And then, you know, I started doing, when I was in high school, I would host the pep rallies and the talent show and I did the afternoon announcements. It was a small school and everybody knew I wanted to be a comedian. So I kind of got, they let me be the host of everything.
That's awesome.
And you know, and I'm trying out jokes and, and then when I was 17, I heard about this local comedy club, the Funny Farm, and I didn't have a car, and my father actually drove me to my first open mic night.
Oh, wow.
And I was too embarrassed to have him come in with me, so I asked him to wait in the car. And I went in and I this adult world, and I did it, and then I came out, and then I went back a couple weeks later, and then my dad went in with me the next time, and you know, and then it was, and then I started playing that club. I became a regular there. I would do, it was a Friday, Saturday club. And instead of going to like football games and school dances, for like my junior and senior year in high school, I was mostly going to the comedy club.
Wow.
Is there an alcohol, like you being 17, do they have to bring you in the back door and say that you're 21 or what? How does that work when you're underage at an alcohol license?
They knew I was underage and, you know, they let me drink.
Oh, really? Oh, wow. Yeah. Okay.
Nobody ever said anything.
Jeez, that sounds like Britain. That doesn't sound like America.
Yeah, that sounds very like, not here.
I was in this adult nightclub world. It was fantastic.
Wow.
That's awesome. That's a great story to like the one that, you know, when you saw being 11 and seeing the stage and be like, oh, wow, this is what I like to do. Like
that's I can still picture it. That moment changed my life forever.
Yeah, I think it's, well, for me, it was also like back in D.C. when I first started the D.C. Improv, doing improv. And the first time I did that family show where you know, at the end of the class and the first time being on stage. And I was like, wow, I like, you know, it's like that feeling of like, I felt more comfortable being on stage than being off on stage. And I was like, okay, this is it.
Yeah. Yeah.
I love that DC improv, that stage is.
Oh, I think that's one of my favorite clubs in performing. It's such a great, like the low ceilings and everything. It's just so perfectly made, you know?
I agree.
Yeah, I too will never forget like the atmosphere of my first comedy club. Mine was in Scotland. I did go to Coconuts on Hilton Head Island when I was in Hilton Head Island, but I don't count that as my first real trip to a comedy club because it was haphazard. But that feeling when I was in the Stand Comedy Club in Edinburgh and my first time and just feeling that atmosphere, then yeah, I know that feeling just hits you, goes, oh my God, this is the perfect combination of humanity and joy that I want in my life.
You lost your virginity in Hilton Head Island, South Carolina, but you don't want to admit it.
You might be right. Well, it was around my virgin years. I worked for Hilton Head, or worked for Marriott Hotels in Hilton Head Island briefly before going off to find a real life. But yes. Yeah, buddy. The next question was a theoretical one. I predicted Rich Hall merely because when I first met you, I was working at the Gilded Balloon in Scotland, in Edinburgh. So I was just a newbie. I'm not even sure if I was officially a comedian yet. But you but Rich Hall became my mentor because he actually took me to Nova Scotia when he first discovered me. I did an open spot in front of him at the Comedy Store. So I'm excited that you mentioned Rich as well, because I worked at Backstage too. And you and Rich Hall were at the Gilded Balloon when I was a newbie just venturing it. And that's why somehow in my mind, I thought you would say Rich, because I knew you guys were buds. So I love hearing his name. And then you've picked New Zealand, which, I mean, I know why, but why don't you clarify for everybody?
Yeah, I don't know why, because I've never been there, but I...
Exactly how beautiful this place is.
New Zealand is pure heaven. you know, the Northern Island looks like... the North Island looks like Northern California had it never been fully developed.
Right.
It's mountainous. There's more sheep than there are humans in New Zealand. So you drive around and just see like thousands of sheep on like a mountainside and stuff. And then the South Island is where they filmed Lord of the Rings and all that. Rich Hall has been a great old friend of mine. When I did Viva Vietnam for this special for Comedy Central, I could take one writer with me to Vietnam. Oh. I told Rich. And awesome. I had met Rich, and it was kind of he was bigger than this thing and this writing job, but he loved the concept, and he went with me, and we really bonded there. And Rich is the guy who suggested I come to England. He thought that I would do really well in England. So Rich is the one that helped me get in with London. I slept on his couch. And then he taught me the first trip to London. And this is true for like other cities too, but he told me the first trip, don't go to the best clubs. You go to the perfect clubs. And you get your sea legs, figure out how to perform in this environment. And then once you got a handle on that, then you go to the Comedy Store, then you go to the best clubs. And so he coached me on what to do. So when I went and did a set at the Comedy Store, I rocked the balls off the place and then got in. And then, Rich actually gave me a key to his apartment, his flat in London. Wow. And he was on the road a lot. So I started going to London a lot. I was living in New York City. This is the second time I lived in New York City when I had money and it was nicer. And then I started going to London a few times a year. And I loved it. It was great.
And what was the decision of you like you said that you wanted to go in London because London would open the doors to perform worldwide. Why did you make that decision of wanting to perform worldwide and not being like, you know what, I want to be the star in America?
Well, I didn't know it would lead to anything. I was only concerned with London. All these entertainers and bands and just, all these things that I loved about entertainment and I just thought London was the coolest and I wanted to go taste it, big Stones fan, you know, Led Zeppelin. Yeah. It's, you know, Hendrix went there. That's where, you know, Jimmy rocked it. You know, Bill Hicks did great there. Just the whole romantic notion of, if you get in with London, you get, it's like getting in with New York.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's also busy, isn't it? It's
you like, gotta like, be a certain caliber comedian to go over there and get those gigs, because there's so many great comedians. There's so many pigs trying to get on the same nipple. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
So, I did great. London was great, and then all that other stuff that came was purely accidental. I had not planned any of it. I was just focused on getting in with London.
Yeah, the thing that I loved about my time in Britain is that it when you talked about San Francisco, it reminded me a little bit of the way I felt in Manchester, because when I moved to Manchester, England, at the start of my career, we had a Comedy Store and a Jonglers there, but we also had all these satellite gigs all around Manchester, and you were just busy constantly in this community. When you mentioned San Francisco, that reminded me, when you were saying, yeah, you can sleep in your own bed at night by being in the middle of all these great gigs. And that's how I feel in London as well, as an open spot in London. When I was doing I was on stage every night, even as a persona non grata open spot guy. You can find 5 minutes every night in a city like London, and that really turns you into a better comic.
So. Yeah, and only like New York, London, you could set up like four or five. Once I got in with the scene and was getting offered all this work, it was really fun and exciting to play there. Like in the same in New York, where you're doing four or five sets in a night around London. And it's like, you got to figure out, you know, the train to get there and the taxi from this place to that place. You know, this one's a short walk, and just that adrenaline rush of, am I going to make it there in time for my spot? And then like going like, from a taxi directly on stage, I think is really thrilling, you know?
Yeah, so, that's happened. If you got to get from Camden to Greenwich for a gig, and only people in London will understand how hard that is.
Yeah, in LA you get the same thing, but you're stuck in traffic for an hour, and then you go,
it's only two city blocks.
Yeah.
I wanted to take it back to New Zealand for a second, just to mention how beautiful it is, because we didn't touch on Queenstown, which Queenstown. Absolutely gorgeous. I'm sure you've been there a few times.
I never got to go there. No.
Oh, okay.
In 2013, I did the New Zealand Comedy Festival. Yeah. I did 2 weeks in Auckland, and then I got to do a two-week Best of the Fest tour. And the first week was all over the North Island in beautiful old theaters, and then the second week was beautiful old theaters all over the South Island. So doing that tour, I got to see so much of the country. But I did not get to Queenstown.
No Queenstown stop. I think because we had it when I was there. But well, anyway, it is gorgeous. But what I was going to say about New Zealand overall is, I'm sure they gave you this tidbit of information while you were there, but it's the only place in the world that has all four climates. In like you've got a beach, you can get beach, rough terrain, mountainous forestry, and high mountainous snow. And so it's the only place in the world where military is sent to train. So Canadians and Americans and Aussies, they all love to train in New Zealand because they're able to get all four, what is it, types of climate or whatever you call it. Like you can land on the beaches and be in the mountaintops in the evening. And that kind of blows my mind a bit, the fact that they've got all of that in New Zealand. They've got everything, you know, every type of climate, basically. So a very good pick, man.
Good stuff.
Very good pick. You're acing the exam.
Yeah. You're in a pass. It's a pass and fail test. We don't have grades here, but the next question that we had was about the holidays, traveling with your family and stuff like that. And you mentioned that since you moved from DC to Orlando, then your summer holiday vacations were to DC.
Yeah.
And you mentioned the whole talking about, because I grew up in DC, and I do remember when we moved there, you know, we did the whole thing of like moving to like, you know, going to the Smithsonian, the mall, and every time people visit us, we always went to the Space Museum first.
Yeah,
and then, that's the only one that was like.
Yeah, my father really loved history and knew a lot about history, so he was always great. And then my family were several generation Washingtonians, so not only did we have family history in D.C., but my father just knew all this history. Driving around with him, he'd point out, but you know, that's like. The Air and Space Smithsonian Museum. That's, you know, you see that. That's like, what's, you know, they got the Spirit of St. Louis there. There's like everything, the Wright brothers plane.
Yeah, yeah.
The capsule that right. the Apollo 11 crew.
They have the theaters to play the movies with like the space and stuff like that, or fly, or you feel like you're flying, you know.
It's the best when you're a little kid. We'll go back. Virtual 3D things, is that it? You think that you're moving?
Yeah, because I think that one, yeah. And that one I think is the best to go with a family because there's so much stuff to do, you know, especially for kids. Like, you actually do enjoy it. Like, the other ones are a little like, especially like if you go to see the, you know, the Lincoln Memorial, it's kind of like, okay, there's Lincoln. And that, you know, that, like, that's it. Like, you take the picture and then you go like, all right, what?
You can stand on the spot where Martin Luther King Jr. gave his speech. There's a little...
Really? I haven't seen that.
If you look on the steps, there's a little brass plaque in the spot. So that's pretty cool to stand there, you know, where he rocked the earth with.
I stood at the pool where where Forrest Gump.
That was your highlight.
Jenny, that was my. There's a spot there, but.
Jenny. He was looking for her in the crowd there, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. She came. Yeah. Where he was saying his whole thing about Vietnam.
There was a museum that closed a few years ago that was phenomenal. And I went there about 5 or 6 years ago when I played at the Improv. It was the Newseum. Did you ever go to the Newseum?
Oh, yeah. I mean,
man, it was great.
I haven't been there. I knew it opened because I think that was after I moved to LA. So, like, but yeah, I heard about it, but I don't have it.
Been cool place. They had all these like drawers. There was this big main section, and they had all these like newspapers from history, like the headline of when like the Magna Carta.
Oh, wow.
Was from England, like newspapers from all around the world. But they were in these like, you know, kind of air sealed glass drawers, and you could pull it out and see like the front page of the actual. Newspapers. I don't know what they did with it. The place like closed, but
it
was cool to just sit there and like, you know, the Lindbergh baby and, the end of World War II or anything you could think of. They had the.
And did you actually grow up in DC or was it because people when I say I'm from DC, I grew up in Maryland, but you know, is it like the DMV area? But did you actually
I was born in Southeast Hospital, so I was born in the Diamond, but we lived in Silver Spring.
Okay, yeah, I lived in Bethesda, then Rockville, and then went to school in Sweden, you know, by close to Silver Spring. So
all right, when we're talking, because I'm aware of the Eastern Seaboard, but we're talking a hell of a car journey. From Florida to DC, aren't we?
Yeah,
this is a few days on the road. For what size family are we talking here with the Rhodes family in a car to get back to DC for a summer holiday?
Two older brothers and
brothers.
And
that's a busy car.
My mom.
They're doing
the fall asleep. The head jerk.
Right.
What kind of car was it? Was it like Chevy Chase vacation?
Red station wagon with wood panel doors for most of my childhood, and that was cool. You could sit way in the back. It was the seat that opened up in the back, and you could face looking out the back. I don't know if you guys are too young to remember that.
I remember my grandma putting us in the back when it was like packed. I mean, she would actually put the dog and the parrot like in the seat, and then me and my sister had to go in the back. I was like,
did you say parrot?
Yeah, when my grandma had a dog, a cat, and a parrot, and when it was like the big vacation, like a long vacation, like where we would stay at her beach house for like a while.
Yeah.
She would bring all the animals. So it'd be like,
oh, wow.
A zoo, you know.
Francisco, did you say that you went to school in Sweden?
No, no, Wheaton.
Wheaton.
Okay. Wait.
Silver Spring. No, no, no. Like,
I thought Council I heard High Sweden school. Too.
I thought I heard Sweden. I was like, okay.
Sorry. No. Good Council High School. I don't know if you ever heard.
My father thought it was very important that we were all born in the city limits.
Oh, really? Oh, yeah, because of the history.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, are you actually? So that means you're a royal of DC. Are you have blue blood or of Washingtonians? You know?
No.
Oh, okay. I don't know. Since the royal theme is going on, I don't know if that's a thing now.
People that were there for generations, and not one of them were smart enough to buy land.
Yeah. Oh, right.
Same like my grandpa.
Maryland and Virginia was all pretty undeveloped and like.
Yeah. Well, that's the cool thing when I say to people, it's like when people go to DC and they're like, and they really like the city. And I was like, well, the thing is like DC was an actual city that was actually architecturally like made because Maryland and Virginia gave a piece to actually make the city. So then Lafayette, I think it was Lafayette or somebody. Like he is the one that, you know, that's why it looks very like Paris and has that French influence, but it's very well, like, because cities usually, like, they start like this, and then they grow up, and then, you know, like, but this one was like, okay, you have this space, make it.
Yeah, it was planned.
Right. Yeah. I'm really glad you guys clarified that there's no Sweden in the Washington, D.C. area, because I was thinking that for a second.
Well, what's that neighborhood in London is Swiss...
Cottage? Swiss Cottage?
Swiss Cottage is like a subway stop in London. It's by Primrose Hill.
Yeah. But
if there's a Swiss cottage.
Oh, right. Yeah. Oh, yeah, of course. Well, there's a Canada Water stop as well in London. But you know, there's an Ontario here in California. So, and Ontario is one of our provinces in Canada. So, yeah. So
I went to Ontario, Oregon.
I mean, you'd think that human beings would be creative enough to come up with some new names.
Nah. By the way, I want to give just a quick hi to the people listening and watching. My Gun Is Huge says, I am not too young to remember that. So I'm thinking, I think he's talking about the station wagon.
Oh, cool.
And then, and Soma, you know, she's, I just want to say hi. He says, hi, Tom. And then we have a question with Brain Guts that we'll answer at the end.
Yeah, we'll get to the questions in a little bit. We're halfway through. We're halfway through Tom's answers, which have been awesome so far. I mean, this one's really straightforward, but I'm dying to find out if it's happened, if you've lost it at all. But the question was an essential item that you take with you on the road. A comedian's joke book, of course, is always valuable, but I will say with confidence, you can do a show without having seen your joke book for a day or whatever. But I'm dying to know, unless I'm wrong, but have you ever had a joke book lost or stolen that you're like, holy shit, I got to get it back?
When I was younger, like in my 20s, and I was such a wild man partier, and I used to carry it around with me. And I left them in bars a few times. And then, you know, you go back to the bar to get it, and you know that they've read your stuff, and some of the writings are dark. Kind of embarrassing. I've lost them. I've always gotten them back. Fortunately, I've never like completely just lost one. But as far as like travel, like, tips or things like that, I'll tell you what I used to do when I was on the road continuously. I love clothes, but like when I would do the worldwide circuits, be traveling, you know, I always have like, you know, my best favorite clothes to wear, but I would also have 20 pairs of underwear and 20 pairs of socks, because you don't know when you're going to be able to do laundry again. Like if you're doing a tour in Asia for like 2 weeks, you can go with dirty pants, but you can't go with dirty socks and underwear, you know?
So you're taking 20 pairs of underwear and socks for anytime, like even if it's like a weekend?
No.
Okay.
No, no longer.
If I was going to just a weekend in the United States, I would just a few.
Be fine.
No. Yeah. When I was traveling epically around the world.
Got it. Yeah, no, I do that too. Whenever I go, if I'm going to a weekend or something, and it's like, you know, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, I always bring like two or three just in case, you know. I don't know what that in case means, but I'm like going like, fuck it, you know, just in case. Because, yeah, I'm not going to do laundry or anything like that, but I never want to bring just the exact amount because
you might sit next to an ink squid on the plane.
Yeah, you got to have an extra day. But, yeah, definitely trousers, jeans can be reused. But, yeah, socks and underwear are too valuable, man. And often, too, if you mention Asia, you can buy socks for more than or for less than laundry will cost you anyway. Yeah. So you might as well just pop down there and buy some
songs. And you mentioned the notebook. Are you still writing a notebook? Because for me, like, because I lost it so much now, like what I do is like, if I do have an idea while I'm outside, you know, I just jot it down on my phone on like the notepad or something. But then I come back at home and then I do use the notebook to like write long, you know, whatever. Do you still do that?
That's what I always do. I'll write notes on my phone. I'll write notes on pieces of paper or on little, I have little small portable notebooks. And then I always call the main book the mama book. So mm-hmm. bring back the notes to the mama book. And then when you're like writing out something you wrote on your phone or on a piece of paper, then you add extra thoughts. It gives you more time to think about it. The thing since the pandemic hit on March 20th, I mean, everything shut down March 13th last year.
Yeah.
I've been, I've turned my joke books I've been writing a daily journal.
Oh, okay.
So I've been writing daily, filling a page at least every day since March 20th I started.
Wow. Every day?
Right.
Every day, fill in at least a page. So, you know, talking about what I'm doing and thoughts and some joke ideas. And I like forcing myself to write at least one page a day. And I don't think that's too much to ask. So
not at all.
I want to keep that pace going where right. I used to just write in flourishes or like just, you know, a one line thing or, you know, here's just a premise and, you know, it's like a quarter of a page. I like forcing myself to write. So there's been a few good things about the pandemic.
Nice. Yeah, no, I think that's a great thing too. And I was listening to a podcast with Jerry Seinfeld and he was talking about writing and the process of writing and he's like, yeah, it's like writing is like you, it has to be a thing what you do, you know, every day or almost every day. And like, it doesn't mean that you have to like, all right, I'm going to do 2 hours or 3 hours. It can mean like, hey, at least if you're going to do 30 minutes or 20 minutes, at least make those 20 minutes just on writing, you know? And then, you know, if you get tired, boom, that's it. And you did your stuff. If you want to keep writing, you keep writing more, you know, and then go back. But like, but that's a thing you have to develop that habit in order. And that's when good things happen with your writing and your stand-up and everything.
Yeah, I like that you have a mother book as well. I love because I do too. I have satellite books. I have satellite books hidden in various places around my apartment. And then yes, and then I have if they're good enough out of one of the satellite books, they graduate and they get written out full form in the mother book. I like that. I'm with you on that approach as well, Tom, buddy man.
Very much. All right. So the next question we had was like, what was your favorite recreational activity while on the road? And you mentioned going out to restaurants and going to vinyl record shops and bookstores.
Yeah. Are you a foodie or do you just enjoy?
And why travel if you're not going to take advantage of the great food? No, I'm a huge foodie and there's so much great food all over North America and the world. But yeah, my main thing, I'm obsessed with vinyl and I love books, you know, and that's the thing about traveling. I mean, aside from being in a notebook, I always bring with me a book that I'm reading and that's you know, in the last 10 years, it's kind of annoying on airplanes. Like when you, they're constantly making announcements.
Yeah.
On airplanes. Yeah. And then when you're in the United States, when you're in the airport, you know, like CNN is always on. And like, hey, I want to read my book. I'll get very far away from the TV. And then you go find the furthest seat so you can, and there's a fucking speaker right over your head. The CNN.
Yeah.
That's kind of annoying, but I love flying because I'm always sitting there like crushing books. And I use that time to, feed my skull.
And all really? The books that you have, you've read, the ones that you purchased in your whole library, you've read all of them?
No. Oh. I've read
through a few.
No, I think I've read 40%.
Okay. Right. It's still a lot.
That's still a lot. Considering how that's a big wall, man.
A lot of books.
Wow. And then also in terms of food, like have you what's the one of the places that you got, like, you were like, wow, like this is I never tasted anything like that or eaten anything like this. Something that was exotic that you never had before. And you were like, wow.
You know, one of my favorite things on the planet Earth, and I would fly there just to eat it.
Right.
Black pepper crab in Singapore and Malaysia. Singapore and Malaysia both argue over who invented it. Doesn't matter as long as it's, I remember the first time I went to Singapore, I didn't like it. And then I went back and a comedian showed me around what was great about it. And one of the places he took me to this like black pepper crab restaurant, and it's really messy. They also do chili crab, which is a little more, the chili crab is a little bit more sweeter.
Okay.
The black pepper crab. Oh my God, it's so delicious. And in Malaysia, they also do this thing called murtabak, which it's minced lamb and egg and onion in like a roti bread cooked in butter type thing.
The bread is so good there too.
And then you dip it in like a curry sauce.
Oh wow. But is it black pepper crab? You have to like, is it like you have to cut, like do it with your hands and cut it and rip it? Is that how?
They're not the size of Alaskan
crab. They're usually already kind of broken up a little bit, but yeah, you have to work a lot to get it.
That's awesome. I'm gonna try it. I'm gonna have to try that whenever I go to those places.
Yeah, I'm sure there's places in LA that
It's, I find it hard to find good. I'm a crab fan, but softshell crab I've always loved. I don't even know if I could find black pepper crab, but it's not as good here. I hate to say that about LA, but I haven't found good softshell crab yet. But you know, maybe that's secondary on a lot of people's lists.
I didn't grow up with crabs like eating wise, because back in Venezuela there was like a lot of crabs, like when the beach house that we went, but it was like stuff that you would just, they were disgusting. They just had a big head and you didn't eat it. And they were like, just like, they were annoying. You just like ran into them or whatever.
So they were kind of small and they didn't have a lot of meat on it, right?
Yeah, it was just a big ass head. And whenever they were crushed, it's like, nobody would eat that. So like when I moved to, especially Maryland, you know, Baltimore, which is like they love their crabs over there. Like I was like, I was always being like, and now I like it, but it's always weird, like crabs, because to me it was like, you don't need crabs. They're disgusting.
Yeah, some crabs we don't want. There are some kinds of crab we don't want. Our final question, buddy, big guy, was a tradition of a different culture. I mean, you gave us a double answer, which is perfect anyway, because of the time of COVID, you gave us the bowing and I don't know if I'm into that though. I miss shaking hands. I do understand why you said it'd be good if we bowed.
No, but my whole life, like how can you judge someone's character if you're not shaking hands? Like, you know,
I always thought. Yeah.
I hate the
limp fish,
the soft hand. Oh, when you shake hands, you know that they're a creep.
Yeah, you're like, no, you're like, so I feel bad for the kid when they give me a limp. I'm like, how is neither of your parents has taught you to to shake a man's hand, meet them, and look them in the eye.
Yeah,
you know. So,
but I do like the bowing thing. I think to me that's a great thing to do because it's like, you're not touching anybody, and it's a sign of respect, and that's it. And then you know, you don't have to bow hard.
Can you ever see Americans doing that though? Can you ever see a tradition sweeping Americans going, okay, we bow from now.
Can't get half this country to wear masks. So
yeah. So not a chance. And then you moved on to the head. I don't know the name of the headdresses, but you were basically adding some color.
I don't know if it's also called a hijab, but it's not right. It's not a full face covering, but like these women will have these like head scarves. And they're very colorful and tropical, like, of bright colors, pastel colors. And I find it very attractive.
Right. Right on.
I do have to say that girls wearing masks and then when you see the eyes only, I do see the appeal of it, you know, in a way, because the eyes, they give you so much, you know what I mean? Like when so it's kind of like, I think I kind of get now the whole culture of that.
Now that we've all been with masks.
We've all been under masks.
We get it. Yeah.
We're all starting to learn how to, I'm like, cause when I try to smile at people or occasionally I smile at somebody to try to disarm them, you know, or so hopefully they'll be kind to me and return. But under that mask, nobody can see us smiling. So I've learned to work the eyebrows now, the same as, you know, some of my female friends have, they do up the eyes like really nice because they know that that's where the power is now. It's no longer in the, you know, smiling at people or anything like that. So you got to work your eyelids. I'm still not good at it. I still know that I have my mask on and I'm trying to show that I'm smiling with my eyes and somebody's still looking grumpy. I'm like, it's not working. He's got a brand new vinyl out. Please check it out. When we start touring again, this man's name should be on your list. Go and see him at a club.
You can only get the vinyl record from me. It's not available.
Nice. So you got how do people contact you?
You can get me on Instagram or write me on Facebook. I never look at Twitter. I haven't been on, I call it the 8 faucet. I haven't been on there in a few years. If you want it, you can write me through Instagram.
Awesome.
Thank you very much, Tom, and congrats on your new vinyl record. And yeah, we can't wait to see you actually live and hopefully, you know, do some bowing, not hugging, you know.
Yeah, I can't wait to be in a green room with you, man, and shoot the shit. It's been too long, and hopefully we'll see you really soon. Yeah,
I love you both, and I'm really happy that you got this podcast rolling, and safe distance hugs to both of you.
Thank you for doing it.
You're welcome. Yeah.
Thanks,
buddy. Have a great night.
Okay, guys.
Good night, all.